This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KLT FM HD2 Houston and Odyssey Sports Station, and we're joined by Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio. It sounds like, Nick, that C.J. Gardner-Johnson is going to be back for Week 1 here, according to D'Amico on Monday. I personally, the fact that we didn't get to see C.J. in joint practices or any of the preseason games has me very excited. What do you expect him to bring to this defense this year?
Yeah, CD's certainly trending in the right direction. So hopefully he has, you know, a good few days here this week. He's worked really hard to put him in a position. So, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, CD's a good football player. He has a certain level of toughness and physicality that he brings. He's a very instinctive, very aware player. He's kind of played multiple positions over the course of his career. So excited about what potentially he could bring to our team. You know, which is why we made the trade for him. So, you know, excited for CD, and he's worked really hard to get to this point. So hopefully have a good week and put himself in a position to be ready to go for Sunday.
And Jake Andrews, I guess, you know, we probably haven't talked as much about Jake Andrews as we have because he's played 70 some snaps in the NFL, at least on offense, a few more on special teams. But what was it about him that, you know, made you interested in him? And then obviously what was it about him that's earned him this starting job, or at least as far as Sean and I know, he's the starting center on Sunday.
Yeah, sure. No, he was a player that we evaluated when he was coming out of Troy in 22 or 23, whatever year that was. He had a certain, I'd say, playing style, physicality, toughness about him that what we liked, and we graded him kind of accordingly. And then he was drafted there in the fourth round by New England, and then kind of was up and down there. There's a number of things that took place, some coaching things, you know, different coaches, different philosophies. And then in 24, his season essentially was cut short with an injury. So I think it was a situation where when they moved on, it was just about he probably needed a fresh start, and they were kind of moving in a different direction. So that was a situation for us. We went back to, you know, we've talked about this. We went back to our notes from the draft. What do we think of the player coming out? Even though, to your point, Seth, there wasn't a lot of film, but that's where you got to go back and trust the information that your scouts had accumulated. And the fact that Cole had coached him, we had some more better understanding of what the player was about. We felt that was a player that when we claimed him, he would at least be competitive with the rest of the group, understanding we were kind of still piecing that together. But from jump, I mean, his attitude, his mindset, the way he works, I mean, he's upstairs as much as any player watching film, spending time with Cole and Zach and just making sure that he's ready to go. He doesn't say a lot. He kind of lets his actions do the talking, which is emblematic of a lot of players on this team. And we had legit competition at center. JP's played a number of snaps. He started and played quality football for us. You know, Juice really has the most position flexibility between those guys, center to guard, but Juice has started at center. So we let the competition kind of sort itself out. The reality is we're probably going to need everybody in that room at some point. But Jake has earned this opportunity with his work ethic, with his mindset, and you know, we're glad that he's here.
Yeah, what along that offensive line, Nick, like you got nine guys that are on the 53 man. I know you got a few more on the practice squad, but the nine guys on the 53 man, half, I think more than half the guys might be new faces to you guys this year that you picked up in the offseason. What would you say is the biggest thing that you were prioritizing when you were looking at bringing in those new faces on the offensive line?
I wouldn't say there was any one thing in particular, Sean. It was just there were some players that we moved on from whose contracts were up or that we released. So we had to kind of backfill that room and refill that room. So we kind of did it in stages. It wasn't, well, we're going to do A, B, C, and D. Like, for me to sit here and tell you that, like, I'm not that smart. Like, what we did is take inventory of what are the opportunities that are available to us? Does it make sense? And try to create as much competition as possible. And when you look at the composition of that room, honestly, they've kind of come from everywhere. Players that were here, players that we drafted, players that we claimed, players that we traded for. So for me to sit here and tell you, well, oh, yeah, well, okay, here we go. We're going to bring all these guys in here. This is how we're going to do it, and this is what's going to happen. No chance. Like, I'm not going to tell you that. Like, maybe somebody else, like maybe Omar can tell you that, but that wasn't really part of the plan. So it was just to try to create as much competition as possible and let that sort itself out. But by the same token, also bring in players that maybe have a certain degree of position versatility. And when you look at the composition, you have young players. You have young players that have experience in the league. You have some veteran players that have started a number of games. And reality is, whoever is in this building, there's a good chance that they're going to be on the field at some point. And we have confidence in those players, which is the reason that they're here.
The biggest mystery on the team for me right now, and I mean that literally, is Trent Brown. And I say literally because he's 6'8", 360 pounds. He's a gigantic mystery. And, like, what?
It, massive and he's coming human off being. Yes, he's a massive human
he's
being.
Big.
how is he physically? And, you know, if you had to use him this year, would you be able to use him soon? Or is it still kind of a long-term thing?
No, we'll probably have an idea here. Trent's on a practice squad, so he should be out there practicing. He's kind of was working through, you know, rehab and some different things here in the offseason. He was coming off. He had the injury kind of week 4, 5, 6, whatever it was in Cincinnati last year. So Trent's a work in progress. Trent's also played a lot of football, so I think the big focus right now is going out there and getting some real legitimate live reps in practice, and we'll kind of monitor that progress as he goes, like we do with all the players on a practice squad, you know, and all the players that, you know, whether they're active, inactive, on a practice squad. I mean, the goal for those players is the same thing. Go out there, try to perform the best of your ability on a day-to-day basis, and then, you know, we'll evaluate their progress and try to figure out what makes the most sense for us.
Nick, if I'm not mistaken, pre-COVID, you would never have been able to have Trent Brown on the practice squad. It was all younger guys. How big a luxury is that now to have those spots where you can actually have veteran guys on the practice squad?
No, the league's done a good job of just kind of creating some opportunities. You're absolutely right, Sean. I mean, the practice squad was composed. It was a certain cohort of players, and you had a cap in terms of the number of players that you actually could have on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they put the rules in place where you had a little more flexibility, where you could have veteran players like Jakob Johnson, like Trent Brown, like Harrison Bryant on the practice squad. You can have up to 6 of those players that kind of fit that quote-unquote veteran category. And then the other 10 are standard to practice squad exceptions. So, I mean, part of our job, just to understand the rules, like what are our options, what are the opportunities, and it might give a player another an opportunity if he's not on a roster, he's on a practice squad, but that puts him a step closer to potentially playing. So I'd say everybody has probably benefited across the league, and it makes a lot of sense. And when you look at the rigors and the demands that are placed on the players, you know, it's very taxing physically and mentally, so you just want to make sure you have enough reinforcements in the building so that at some point when a guy can't play because of injury, like you have an option hopefully in your building that go in there and play at a competitive level.
You know, Nick, one of my favorite coaching positions in all of sports is the bullpen catcher. Because you're a coach, but you're the bullpen catcher. You're not allowed to play in the games. That's why I need you to push for that this offseason. I want
to find the equivalent of the bullpen catcher in
like
the NFL.
Bullpen pass rushers that you could just have guys
that can never play.
they can have, they're not allowed to play, but like JJ Watt could come in and on Wednesdays and Thursdays be out there for blitz period and stuff and just give your guys a look without, you know, so you can have kind of one-on-one battles, but with less taxation on them. Yes.
And then he can go call his games on Sunday. So get a couple of days of practice and then go call some games on Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be his production meeting. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of which.
Why don't you pitch that to him?
That's my dream, for there to be a bullpen pass rusher position. But Tom Brady, he broadcasts games on Sundays. He's going to be allowed in the production meetings this year. You've got a lot of experience with Tom Brady, and you know the way his brain works. If one of your players is going in to do a production meeting with Tom Brady, do you tell him to watch out? Do you tell him, like, hey, little, like, almost like he's meeting with Hannibal Lecter or something? Like, just listen. Be careful about what you say to this guy because he's also an owner of the Raiders.
You can never go wrong by saying less. So if you follow that formula, you're going to be in a good spot. I mean, Tom's one of the smartest people, like, literally, that's ever been in this league. So he's very strategic and very smart, so be careful about, don't give him any extra ammunition because he's certainly going to use it to his advantage.
Will Henderson's going to be so nervous the first time he goes into a meeting with Tom Brady. He's either going to get, because it's so hard for him to not talk.
I know. Will would be the one I'd be most nervous about, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like Tom would give him a couple compliments or something, and maybe some cookies that his wife cooked, and we'll just
make sure, like, Tom's not trying to recruit Will to come out there.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No,
Crosby.
No, please.
That's when you got to fill him in on all the dirt about Tom. What a horrible person he actually is. Hey, listen. Listen, Will, this is what you don't know about this guy.
Oh, my God. That's great. Texas Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Nick, Sam Warren had a really good piece in the Chronicle, I think yesterday, about Cole Popovich and kind of his journey to, you know, through the NFL, well, really through some small college stuff into the NFL and now here to Houston. And he was steeped under the wings of Dante Scarnecchia when he was in New England. What have you seen from Cole so far as the guy coaching the offensive line I'm not saying he's Dante Scarnecchia, but at least some of the traces of some of the learnings that he's had through the years here.
Yeah, Cole's worked really hard during this opportunity, and he didn't have it easy. When you look at kind of where he started and to where he is now, it's a credit to him and his approach. And I think what you're hoping for as a player is just whomever the coach is just for somebody that's consistent, that's honest, and that's authentic. And I think Cole embodies a lot of those principles. And we're all a product of whatever our upbringing is and how we were trained and what we learned. But there's only one of that equivalent person. There's only one Dante Scarnecchia. There's only one Tom Brady. There's only one Cole Popovich. So you really have to be true to who you are. But you observe and you watch and you learn and you see some of the things that worked. Why was that effective? How did the players respond to certain things? So your job as a coach is to figure out, how am I going to teach? How am I going to communicate, and what's going to be my process on a day-to-day basis? I think the way Cole goes about his business, he has his own style, which is important, but he's very smart. He works very, very hard. He played the position, so he has a little bit of a background in terms of, you know, what the expectation, understanding is of scheme, etc. And he and Zach Yenzer have worked really well together. And your job as a coach is just to get the players prepared so when they go out there, they can perform at an optimum level. Cole's worked really hard. There's a reason that we brought him into the program when we did. And he's put himself in a position to lead the group. It's not an easy job. I mean, you're managing a lot of different people, personalities. It's a bigger room as there is on a team. I mean, we got 9 on the roster, 3 on a practice squad. So you're dealing with, 12 offensive linemen. Defensive line is close, but you're managing a lot of people, and there's only 5 that can play. So how do you handle those situations? I mean, there's a delicate balance in there, but I mean, I think we all learn from coaches that we're around. I mean, I learned a tremendous amount from Dante. I mean, I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration and appreciation for his work ethic, the way he works. I think that's one of the things that anybody that was around him took away from him. Nobody worked harder than Dante Scarnecchia, even at the end. I mean, he literally was in the building at 4 o'clock in the morning. He was the first one in the building. Like, you knew, like, if there's a coach that was there, it was going to be Dante. So, I mean, I think when you see something like that, you can't but tip your hat and say, you know what? That might be smart to kind of maybe take some of those principles and philosophies with me. But, you know, Cole's earned this opportunity, and we're glad he's here.
When it comes to hiring a position coach, is that like obviously you have the, you know, you talk to common acquaintances and all of that, but do you do actual film work on going back and kind of seeing how players have progressed through the season with guys, you know, groups they've worked with?
There's a lot of different ways you can handle it. So if you have players where they coach X number of players, you might ask them for their evaluation of the player. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And then when you get into a meeting, you know, with the coach or with D'Amico, there's probably going to be some scheme things that come up. Hey, what are you teaching here? What are you looking for? What's your thought process? How do you go about it? So there's always a lot of, there's no one size fits all when you're doing an interview, but you're trying to get information and you're really trying to get a sense and a fit and a feel for the overall personality. And does it fit within the program that you're building? D'Amico's as good as anybody is just understanding people and working with people. So there's always a lot of factors that go into, you know, bringing assistant coaches on. And the reality is, it's like players. You might think it's going to go a certain way, and for whatever reason doesn't work out, no hard feelings. You just move a different direction. But you got to go through your process and try to arrive at an endpoint that everybody feels comfortable with.
Nick Caserio joining us. Hey, Nick, before we get you out of here, the calculus changed again over the last week for highest non-paid or highest. Why am I having such a hard time saying this? Highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. And it's that whole thing's taken a big jump this offseason. If there's a contractual theme, it's, man, it was in the low 30s and now it's $47 million a year. I'm just curious from a GM's perspective, especially one who's probably going to have some big contracts coming up here soon. When you're seeing that, just put us in your shoes for a second, I guess, when you're seeing that sort of market explode the way that it has.
Yeah, sure. You're cognizant of everything. I mean, we're observing what's going on. It's our job is just have an understanding of the market, and there might be some dynamics that affect your team. There might be some that don't. So just have an understanding of what it means. It's, again, it's not one size fits all. Every contract and every discussion is going to be on a case-by-case basis. So you're looking at the market, you're looking at the growth, where's the salary cap, where's your team, how many players do you have under contract, what are your future commitments going to be? So there's multiple conversations that are going to take place, but the players that receive those contracts have earned those contracts, and they're some of the best players in the league, and you know that's just the way the market is. So our job is to understand it. There's nothing we could do about it. You know, we can't go back and try to change it. Well, it's grown this much. I mean, well, that's what it is. So your job is to adjust and adapt and understand and just figure out how that fits within the context of your team.
Is Notre Dame going to be okay this year, Nick?
I think Notre Dame will be fine.
Okay.
Notre Dame, no panic. Who do they play? Who's coming up here next?
They have the bye week.
We have a bye week.
Then they have the Aggies after that. Oh,
okay. Yeah, that was a good game last year. Is that game in South Bend this year?
It's in South Bend, and I'm just looking at the Texans schedule. No, you're home that weekend, so you won't be able
You're trying to match up schedule. I'm doing the same thing.
You're going to meander over to South Bend for a game.
Notre Dame will be okay. They got one of the best coaches in football, and I thought CJ Carr did a really nice job. So I think he's going to be a pretty good player.
Okay, so we've got
I think the program's in pretty good hands.
Okay, that's good. I feel a little bit better.
And Heinisch's brother, of course. So,
Donovan Heinisch, baby. Yeah.
When you're out, especially when you go to games or go to practice, for various colleges, do you start to get a pretty good feel for, this is a disciplined program versus like, oh boy, like what the hell's going on here with these guys?
No, absolutely, Seth. I mean, we're evaluating programs as much as we are evaluating players, because players are ultimately a byproduct of the environment of what the program is. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It just goes back to understanding what are the emphasis points. What's the philosophy? How have they built a team? What are they coaching? What do they allow players to get away with? What are they not allowed to get away with? So we're absolutely evaluating programs, just to have an understanding, because what we're doing is saying, okay, this player in this program, and then we're trying to project him into our program. We understand what's expected in our program and demands that are placed on those players. So what programs maybe have some of the similar types of qualities? So the transition, there's a little bit more of an ease in transition. So no, you're absolutely 1,000% correct. I mean, it's something that we talk about with our staff quite often, actually, is let's understand the program. Let's understand the coaching staff. Let's understand, like, when you look at Georgia's program, what Kirby Smart is doing, a player that comes out of that program, he's probably going to make it in just about any NFL program, but the reality is that player's probably going to be able to make it in our program as well. I mean, Kamari is a really good example of that. So that's absolutely a big part of the evaluation.
What's the biggest one, so other than Georgia, where maybe you ever stepped on a campus for the first time and with a particular coach, you thought, oh, these guys work hard, or like, oh, this is a, like, you got to be mentally tough to play for this coach.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia, I would say when you go back to, obviously, some of Coach Saban's programs, I think what Coach Lanning is doing at Oregon, there's a lot of similarities to Kirby's program. So, I mean, those are some of the – just how they practice. And, again, there's certain restrictions. Sometimes you can see a team practice. You know, they're in full pads that day, and they have, you know, one-on-one periods or whatever they have. But – yeah, no, there's, I would say, Kirby, you know, honestly, Sark has built a really good program down there at Texas as well. I mean, you know, they lost Ohio State the other day, but, you know, how they practice, how they go about their business, I mean, a lot of respect for what Sark has done. And I would say, honestly, when you look at Coach Elko and what he's doing at A&M, and honestly, I don't really watch that much, but I did watch the SEC profile on Netflix, so you really kind of get a behind-the-scenes view. I mean, Coach Elko doesn't mess around. I mean, he holds the players to a high standard, you know, and they play with a certain mindset and mentality, and you can see why the results are the results and why that program is moving in the right direction. So, you know, you can certainly feel it when you walk onto the campus, watch them play, watch them practice, and, you know, it's exciting to see.
Okay, so just to bring this conversation full circle, have you ever crossed a quarterback off of your big board because his teammates didn't show up to his 21st birthday party? Because that's what happened on draft day with Bo Callahan.
No, yeah. I can't say that I have. Okay. I have some rules with quarterbacks that I won't disclose here publicly on the air, but I definitely have like a checklist of things that are like, if this has player has this,
Oh, man, we are going to truth serum
on
you.
That program.
We are going to truth serum you someday. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, no, you know what? It was. I talked to D'Amico. I got to do an interview with D'Amico during training camp, and, you know, I asked him about energy vampires, because we heard a lot about, you know, hey, no energy vampires the first year D'Amico is here, and I told him, like, I haven't heard people use that phrase a lot, and he said we got rid of all of them.
Not allowed in our building.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
not with his personality. I mean, he's too upbeat, positive, yeah, consistent, and no complaining. Like, there's we don't have a lot of rules around here. That's one of them, and that's not going to change.
No Karens in the building. Yeah, big sign. Nick Caserio joining.
Well, you know, the biggest thing for me has always been, just forever, I don't, whenever a player decides that where the truth needs to be told is to by anonymous quote or something before he's ever addressed it to one of the actual coaches or something, like, you can't have that guy. Like, you know, like, be a man. If you got an issue with a coach, yeah, there's a difference between complaining and discussing. And if you got an issue with a coach, you go discuss the issue with the coach. But, like, airing it publicly or anonymously is, like, you've jumped, like, seven places in the order of how you handle a problem.
Yeah. We're all adults. Just handle everything professionally and just have honest, constructive conversations. Not a hard formula.
There you go. Texans Executive Vice President and GM Nick Caserio. Nick, appreciate the time. I'm looking at the calendar. I think we'll get you at least once before the smack off on Halloween. So we'll be able to dig into that. You know, I'll be leaning on you for material and whatnot between now and then.
No, absolutely. Perfect. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks
for having us on.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate the time, as always. That's Texans General Manager Nick Caserio. All right, let's bounce out here. Let's dig back into some of the things he had to say, particularly about this upcoming week one matchup against the Rams. And the offensive line, the trenches, is where this game is going to be decided. We'll discuss all of that coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Those Nick conversations have gotten fun. Listening, this is a text message. Listening in Tulsa daily on Odyssey. This is by far my favorite segment of the week. You guys and Nick genuinely sound like you enjoy talking to each other. We do. We have good rapport with Nick, I think. I thought two things. There were several things in the interview that jumped out. We'll have audio later throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. The Brady question with you. That was really funny. And Nick was, he was leaning into it also.
About, yeah, I asked, hey,
be careful what you say to him.
Be careful what you say to him. What did he say? Less, you can never go wrong by saying less.
By saying less.
You can never go wrong by saying less.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I think goes into their sparse reporting about injuries as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, look, I think D'Amico 100% means it when he says he wants to protect players and not put out information any more than he needs to. Yep. But I do also think there's a general strategy of, man, if we don't have to talk about it, we're not going to talk about it, because you never know how, why, when, or where any little bit of extra tidbit of information can help your opponent. So having a policy of just saying as little as possible whenever you can, that is just, you don't overthink it. You say as little as you have to.
Yeah.
And I think that guides part of their injury information policy.
100%. Well, and Nick expressed in his press conference last week, I think the other thing, he expressed this when he started to do like the why as to why they handle it, is that, look, if we start giving you estimates on when guys come back, we don't know at this point. Like, injuries are fickle. If we start giving you time frames and we don't hit that time frame, then you guys get all angry with us about
that. No, I'm glad you brought that up, Sean, because after we talked about this the last time, I forgot to bring it up. It's that people here, when they have a set number of weeks attached to something, people treat that as a firmer number than it actually is. Mm-hmm. That injury rehab is not, it's not pure science. There's just, you can't predict that this is a 6-week injury or this is a 3-week injury. And as soon as, if you say it's a 3-week injury and after 3 weeks the guy isn't back, yeah, honestly, you start to get people are still PO'd. Like with the Astros, they're okay, great. The Astros give you some information. Then you criticize them for the information they give you because you don't like the information. If they don't say anything at all, you criticize them.
That's right.
People just get agitated when somebody's getting injured. And it's a no-win situation for the organization. So if your policy is just, nope, we say as little as we have to all the time because that's just a good policy in general, whether it's game planning or injuries.
That's right. I enjoyed the part of the conversation about Davis Mills. The one little thing he dropped in there where I was like, ooh, is he said that we've had teams call us about Davis Mills.
Yeah.
Which is, I would imagine calling, I don't know if they called about them being, about Davis being their starting quarterback. I don't think Nick would have told us one way or the other had we followed up with that at all. But the teams are calling about Davis Mills, I think is telling at least about where he sits on the backup hierarchy right now.
Yeah. You know? No, I think, look, there's obviously some value to him.
Yes.
It's just, okay, what are the Texans willing to part with him for? And then also, I guess what I was kind of getting at, and maybe I could have phrased the question proper differently, but was just, you know, I wonder with a guy like Davis, when he's re-upped with you a couple times, if there's conversations like, hey, like, you're not going to trade me to a stinker of a situation, right? Please, you know, part of having that trust and signing as a backup quarterback is that Please don't make me the seventh string quarterback for the Browns. If the Browns decide to just keep adding quarterback after quarterback. If you do trade me to a good situation,
yep,
or one that I, you know, approve of or are cool with.
Yep. Did you ever hear, this is a text message, did you ever hear the interview with Jason Kelce where he was asked who gave him the most trouble in his career, and one of the names he said was Puna Ford. Nick brought up Puna Ford, who plays defensive tackle for the Rams, unprompted. Well, we asked him about the matchup along the offensive line, and he said he brought up Puna Ford and said not a lot of people are talking about him. And I'm glad you pointed out, Seth, that two segments prior, you brought up Puna Ford's name.
Nobody talks more. That's what we are widely known by, for two things, being the best in the world and being the show that talks about Puna Ford
Thank
a lot.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes.
And this is... And
talk to the Marconi people about it, okay?
Yeah. You guys know how I love to screw up names. Do you know how hazardous it is for me to talk about Puna Ford on a team that also has a Puka Nacua?
Right.
The fact that I haven't called Puna Ford Puka Nacua or vice versa so far this week is pretty damn impressive by my standards.
That you have the courage to go out there and analyze Puna Ford in a game like this one coming up says a lot about you.
When I could easily misspeak and say Puka Nacua.
Right.
Or Puka instead of Puna.
That's courage right there.
Mm-hmm.
This offensive line, we dug deep on the offensive line because you asked him about Jake Andrews, and we got some Mariante Ursary. I loved his answer about Cole Popovich and Popovich's background with Dante Scarnecchia and how Cole's been. It sounds like there's a high confidence level that Cole Popovich has this offensive line moving in the right direction.
No, and I think it's very evident just by the way they operated in the preseason that it's going to be better than it was last year. I don't feel super confident about the ceiling of the offensive line. It's possible that they could end up being a really good offensive line. Right now, anything can happen. You look at the guys on paper, and the only guy I get really excited about for the future right this moment is Ariante Ursary. But every year in the NFL, there are offensive lines that overperform. The Ravens were that way last year, just based on good coaching. It helps when you have Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry to block for.
Yeah.
But maybe it could end up being that situation. But as of right now, I just don't want it to be what it was last year, which was an abysmal mess.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be an abysmal mess last year. I think they're going to look like a competent offensive line.
Yeah, I asked him in that conversation, like, as you were bringing in all these new faces, because they've got four new faces on the offensive line. Titus Howard's going to be the right tackle. The other four guys are all new, and to Nick's point, we're all brought in different ways. You know, trade, signed a street free agent in Jake Andrews, drafted a guy fairly high in Ursary, signed a, you know, kind of a journeyman level contract with Laken Tomlinson. And when I said, what's the one thing maybe that you were prioritizing in bringing these guys in? Nick's answer was kind of like, you know, that I'm not smart enough to really plan it out that way. We just see the opportunities that are presented. I do feel like, though, that toughness and love of football were the cover charge to at least get into a conversation with the Texans.
Well, there's some kind of non-starters, right?
Yeah.
That this is a deal breaker. If you don't have this, then this is a prerequisite.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got some prerequisites. One of D'Amico's prerequisites is you can't be an energy vampire.
Yeah.
And I think in some respects, Laremy Tunsil might have been an energy vampire. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But the guys that don't fit the mold, you just don't have time for it. We're trying to do too many of these things in a certain way. We don't have time for guys that are dragging us backwards in terms of energy level or, you know, being all in on the way we're operating, practicing, perhaps. Like, this is, you look at, you've got a situation with the Texans, which is not the standard situation in the NFL, where your best players on the team are also psychotically passionate about practicing.
Yes.
This is one thing that Peyton Manning used to say about Marvin Harrison and his receivers that he had there, was how much he appreciated that those guys really, really cared about being out there at practice.
Yep.
That they just, that Peyton couldn't do what he did if he didn't have guys that were out there really passionate about nailing down the finer details and everything. And they've done a good job in these last couple of years of kind of whittling it down to, hey, our impact players and the guys that we pay the most money are also the guys that practice the way we want everybody on the team to practice.
Along those lines, I'm looking at a tweet from an account called Blitz Fits. You mentioned Laremy Tunsil. Yeah. Blitzfit, Seth, is an account that their bio says they're changing the narrative of football and fashion. Stay fitted. Yeah. Stay fitted. And it looks like they may have done an article or something about Laramie Tunsil. Yeah, feature article about Laramie Tunsil sitting with his nice, what I'm sure is about a $500 flannel shirt, unbuttoned with his chest hanging out. He's sitting in kind of like baggy jeans, barefoot on his couch. And the Twitter caption says, the title of the article is "The Big Man Blueprint, Laramie Tunsil. Now in D.C. with the Commanders, the Pro Bowl tackle is rewriting the rules for big men. From calculated fits to custom cleats, he's proving linemen deserve the same tunnel talk as the skill guys."
Finally.
Somebody said it, and it's Blitz Fits.
Yes. I've always said you cannot win this year's Super Bowl in last year's fashion. Sean, this is, if you don't...
You've been saying that.
Yes. What, are you going to win a Super Bowl when it looks like you went to Macy's 2 years ago?
Dude.
No.
Yeah. I mean, and I saw a graphic last night about this.
He's redefining the game.
He's redefining. Well, you got to have... Seth, if you're going to be a big, burly left tackle, you better do it with some drip, all right?
Nothing speaks hard-nosed lunch pail football like Cliff Kingsbury and Laramie Tunsil on your team. Those old hogs from the 80s, probably, boy, Tunsil would fit right in with those guys. Yep.
Oh, my God. Dude, I can't believe what I just read on the air. Now in D.C., the Commanders Pro Bowl tackle is rewriting the rules. I think Laramie would take more pride in there actually being an actual rewriting of the rules with an accreditation to him at the bottom of it than winning a Super Bowl. If he found, he would rather change the world of fashion than change the world of left tackles in football.
Would Laramie Tunsil rather win the Super Bowl or Sexiest Man Alive?
Oh, are you kidding me? Sexiest Man Alive in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. In a heartbeat, yeah. Best dressed, cover of GQ. Would Laramie Tunsil rather be on the cover of GQ or the cover of, if it still existed, Sports Illustrated?
Sports Illustrated, yeah. Only if it was Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. That would be
that would be amazing.
Laramie Tunsil in a bedazzled thong.
That would be incredible.
Kind of just suggestively posed on the cover.
Blitz fits. The big man blueprint, Laramie Tunsil. Oh.
Finally, finally the city of Washington is getting...
I've really not been able to internalize how glad I am that he's gone. He were on the Texans going into this season the way last season went. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, by the way, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Here's how you do it. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. The slimiest move we've seen by an owner in a long, long time was discussed on First Take yesterday. We've got it for you coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. If you missed our interview with Nick Caserio earlier, Seth told an incredible story. I'm so glad you told this story, Seth. I like that we've got the relationship with Nick where we can go on some tangents like that. That's kind of, yeah. I think Nick enjoyed this story tremendously. This actually predates Nick being in the NFL. I don't think he got to the NFL until 2000, but this is when Seth was on the Jags. You were rehabbing. Well, I'll let you tell it real quick. Tell the abridged version of it
just
here.
Just a real quick
version. Because I've got the box score in front of me for this game.
The Jaguars played the Vikings on Monday Night Football and just got absolutely destroyed. And on the way home, I was on the injured reserve, so I was just at home watching it. On the way home from the Monday Night Football game, the Jacksonville airport was fogged in, so the team had to land in Orlando and sit on the tarmac for 3 or 4 hours, whatever it was. And I'm going in to do my rehab the next day at like 7 a.m. And in the parking lot, I see Tony Boselli and Mark Brunell getting out of Brunell's car wearing their suits that we would have had to travel in. And I said, what's going on, guys? And they said, well, Coughlin's making everybody come in and do 15 minutes on the exercycle because we lost. So after, like, there was no go home and get some sleep.
Nope.
Like, no, you don't deserve sleep. You need to go in and exercise, and then you can go home and sleep.
That was a funny wisecrack by Nick. Like, oh, I guess this is before we knew about all the sleep studies and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
50-10 was the final score of
it
that game.
It was so bad. Oh.
50-10, and it was a slow, not a slow bleed, but Minnesota had 3 in the first quarter, 9 in the second quarter, 14 in the third quarter, and then the floodgates just opened, and there was 24 points in the fourth quarter.
At one point they had to play a practice squad call up at offensive line, who was awful. He was a really bad offensive lineman. And I'm watching at home, and I'm like, oh, no. And then what the guys told me on the field was this kid came. I won't even say his name. He was that bad. I don't want to embarrass him. John Randall started barking maniacally.
Yeah, you've told
this
story.
And then him and Robert Smith's brother, what was his name? Anyway, we're arguing, fighting with each other over who got to line up over this
No
guard.
Way.
And go against him, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Robert Smith's brother, I'm looking at the starter. So, yeah, nobody named Smith on there. 50-10, the final score. Fred Taylor had over 100 yards rushing in that
game. Fernando Smith.
Fernando Smith.
Maybe Fernando wasn't. It might have been another one of their defensive
players. Yeah. That was a Jonathan Quinn joint that night. 12 of 27, 88 yards, 2 picks. Yikes. All right, so we will not dwell on that game. That was a hilarious story. If you missed it, you can either on the rewind feature or subscribe to the Payne and Pendergast podcast like so many thousands of others have, and you can listen to the interview in its entirety because I know Ben Gary, our producer, does a great job of getting the podcasts up. Here was David Mulligetta yesterday on First Take. Sat down with Stephen A. Smith and the group on First Take. David Mulligetta is Micah Parsons' agent, and he went on there to clear the air about some of the misconceptions that were out there about how the whole Micah Parsons contractual saga went. As Jerry Jones tells it, he and Micah sat down and agreed to a contract back in the summertime, and that he felt that was a binding deal. They didn't need to involve David Mulligetta. David Mulligetta paints a very different picture of the meeting that Micah had with Jerry Jones when they discussed contractual terms. Here's how it went via David Mulligetta.
As far as Micah's concerned, he was out of the country. He got a call from Jerry's assistant and was asked to come in to meet about leadership. So when he got back from his vacation, he came in and he gave them a call, told him he was back. He was ready to meet at some point during that meeting that was represented to him about was going to be about leadership. It turned into contract talk. And, if you're a 25-year-old football player and your boss, who happens to be the most powerful person in the NFL, starts talking about contracts, it's hard for you to end that conversation. So they had a conversation. Micah nodded his head out of respect. Obviously, there's a power dynamic that's a little different there. One guy is the owner of the team and the GM. And the other one is Micah Parsons, a young 25-year-old football player. So I'm not sure if there was a miscommunication there by the time Micah walked out, but at no point did Micah believe that he was negotiating a contract.
You nailed it. That is a timeshare salesman tactic right there.
That's exactly the way that I thought it sounded. And I deduced all this from Jerry Jones and the way he was talking about it. This was Jerry Jones trying to pull the wool over a young person or somebody who's not as, you know, doesn't have the financial acumen that a billionaire does, and just trying to dupe him into signing a contract and forcing, oh, nope, we agreed on it. This is why players have agents. And this is why the collective bargaining agreement doesn't allow owners to try to cut the agent out of the process. And Jerry Jones kept trying to play this Southern Belle, like, well, I just, you know, I didn't realize we had to get a third person involved. I thought that we could just come to it like grown men and have this discussion. He might as well have been a judge saying, like, son, I don't know why you think you need an attorney. Don't you think you can stand up for yourself? Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's a reason. Yeah. The reason is we have defense attorneys, the reason you have agents, yep. The reason you have lawyers. And if somebody has one, you're not allowed to try to cut them out of it. No. Like, the Cowboys should be getting fined heavily for the way Jerry Jones acted in this situation. The problem is that the NFLPA currently has no gonads whatsoever.
It's a headless horseman,
like,
right now.
Yeah, like, literally, I don't know who's in charge right now. Right. I know they don't have any human beings that know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, if what David Mulugeta, if the way he lays that out is accurate, that is nefarious on the part of Jerry Jones.
That's nefarious in plain sight.
Yeah.
It was nefarious in plain sight, the way that Jerry Jones was operating and acting like he was befuddled as to how it works in the NFL. That apparently he's got something they call an agent. I don't know. I've never heard of such a, you clown.
And I know.
You've been in the league for over 3 decades.
There's going to be people like, oh, he's so evil. He was going to give him $40.5 million. Then you just don't understand how negotiations work.
Like, right. No, and also they presented it. They did a classic, like bad baseball teams do sometimes when they say, hey, we offered him this, or they leak that we offered him this. But Jerry doesn't have to leak it. He says it, but doesn't. And again, that's where he was trying to dupe, in his mind, the dumb football player.
Yeah.
The average per year is meaningless.
Yeah.
Sometimes players care too much about the average per year, and they only want to be the highest paid player, and the teams are kind of like, cool, we can get away with it. We'll call you the highest paid player, but not give you the right guarantees.
Yeah, we give you a bunch of funny money years at the end that we're never going to pay you.
And that's what it sounds like Jerry Jones was trying to do.
Yes.
He was trying to treat him like a babe in the woods and take advantage of him and tell him that he doesn't need an agent.
The problem is that because there's social media now and fans keep score on these things, the easiest way to keep score is average annual value. So that's become the metric, because we, as a watching populace here, it's the easiest thing for us to consume. Like, I know that $47 million a year is higher than $45 million a year, and that's all I need to know. And you're right, that's not the real scoreboard. Shouldn't be the real scoreboard. But for some guys, you're right, it is. They like the accolades of people saying that they're the highest paid guy.
Right.
When in actuality, they're not. You know, like, Stingley's a good example of that. Sauce Gardner now has the highest average annual value for a cornerback. He surpassed Derek Stingley Jr. Stingley is getting more guaranteed money. Stingley knows he's going to get $89 million. Now, Sauce is not going to go poor, but he's making like 83, something like that. You know, like, that's the scoreboard.
Because, you know, as an owner, as a GM, you like to be able to, like, placate the player by making him the highest average paid player, but also, you know, not actually giving him the best deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, I feel like most of the players who can't grasp that being the highest paid player, it doesn't mean all that much until you look at it, are also the kinds of guys that you don't necessarily want to give all that money.
Right.
Like a guy that's so wrapped up in being the highest paid guy, as opposed to a guy who's wrapped up in winning Super Bowls or anything else, like, that's there's a division there. I'd almost be like, if this guy accepts this contract, I don't know if he's the right kind of guy.
Yeah, you're right. It's a catch-22.
If his ego is so easily manipulated, yes. I'm not sure he's the right guy. That's an offer retracted.
Yep, it's a catch-22, no doubt. David Mulugeta said that Jerry's assistant called Micah while he was out of the country. I bet he was on that trip to Asia with C.J. Stroud. I bet that's where he was. He was on that trip. I bet he got the call, and Micah looked over at C.J. and said, oh, yeah, I got to go in. You think you're this big leader. I'm getting ready to go talk to my owner about leadership. Yeah. He wants to talk to me about leadership. He probably wants me to put together the entire framework of a leadership Bible for the Dallas Cowboys.
Ugh. Gosh.
Nope, he's just trying to get you to sign for several tens of millions less guaranteed than your agent will get you eventually.
Creepy old geezer that dude is. Yep. I mean, he's been creepy before he was old. He's been creepy. That trailer they show for the Netflix one, where he winks, isn't that the creepiest wink you've ever seen?
It's up there. Yep.
Yeah, like, it looks completely like a wink of, like, sure, you can have this job, but there are strings attached.
That's right. Hey, one quick text. We just got done talking about Laramie Tunsil in the previous segment. Anyone else on false start watch this year for Laramie? Yes, sir. I will be on false start watch every week for Laremy Tunsil. Yeah.
People don't understand. They just don't understand.
They don't. Washington.
I go on these. When Laremy Tunsil got signed, I went on. You and I both did radio shows in Washington. We went on and we told our version of the truth.
Yeah.
And every single time, like, oh, come on, it's 5 yards. You don't know.
You don't.
You didn't live through it.
That's right. That's right. You'll find out. You'll find out, Washington.
The most fun I had was I was on a show in Washington, and I told them about the Minnesota experience where the Texans, by way of 4 straight pre-snap penalties, took themselves out of field goal range.
Yeah.
The final two were Laremy Tunsil. And the host was dead set against me. He looked up the box score as I was talking about it, and he was like, oh, wow.
Come on over, buddy. Come on over. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. If you missed it, we had Nick Caserio on a little bit earlier. You can hit that rewind feature on the Odyssey app or just subscribe to the Payne and Pendergast podcast and you'll get the entire thing. We talked for a good 50 minutes with it. I think this might have been our longest hit with him today. We talked to him for about 50 minutes. It was a good conversation. A lot of Rams game stuff in there if you're looking for some preview material. We'll play some of that in the 9 o'clock hour. We've got some Caserio cuts that we'll get to. But let's circle back. The big topic today here locally actually is Astros. Did Framber Valdez intentionally bean his own catcher last night in the game against the Yankees? We will reset that and give you our take on it coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.